Quick, no wasting any time, huh? All right. My name's Eric. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Eric.
My sobriety date is January 20th of 2000, and I'm from Richmond. Well, I live in Richmond, and my home group is there, and I have a sponsor, and it's good to be sober. I mean, I have some commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a bunch of different things, but all this stuff has led me to sobriety, which was something that I don't think I even in the worst of the drinking did I really want to be sober. I mean, I just drinking was always doing something for me. It was very elusive. It was always solving kind of something for me. It was to the point where like I just was always hammered and still like I'm never gonna stop doing this. So the fact that I'm sober sometimes seems kind of ridiculous. And because I just haven't wanted to drink for a really long time, it left. And that promise has come true. So anyway, I like the trifecta here. This is sweet. It's good. We had the concepts too. I thought for the longest time, like we're probably the only group's got the third window shade, but clearly not. I saw some other group in Richmond has got it, but y'all's are just nice and sober, aligned. Looks good. It's good looking. Good coffee too. Whoever made the coffee, thank you. So anyway, I'm going to talk about my relationship with drinking and what's been going on with that and how it all started and what's been happening in my sobriety. And I drove from Richmond, but I'm from Williamsburg. I grew up there, spent part of my time growing up in Williamsburg. I also grew up part of my time in Connecticut. And I kind of went back and forth a bunch as a kid, and that's not so significant, but I know that as a thinking back to early on, I had a very difficult time connecting with people. That's kind of how I see it now. And that as I saw it then, it was more like nobody wants to be my friend, or I was having a lot of trouble in class. You know, I was just really disruptive or whatever, hyperactive or something, and all these different things. But I just was feeling like I could not seem to connect with people in general. And that really lasted until I started drinking somewhere around sixth or seventh grade. But between those second grade and all that, it just was a lot of moving around. There was a lot of upheaval and just more of the same. And so by the time I did start drinking, it was pretty powerful. I mean, I didn't realize how powerful it was at the time. The biggest thought I had was that I got drunk, but nothing really tragic happened. And I thought for sure something would, because I grew up in a household with a sober parent and we were warned. I mean, we're just told, you know, don't drink, don't ever get involved or whatever that, because you're probably going to be an alcoholic as I am and that kind of thing. So there was a lot of fear and a lot of just, you know, awareness. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. There was just a lot of just don't ever do this because it's not going to go well for you. Oh, I guess that's probably true. Here I am. Here we are years later. But It just wasn't this tragic thing. I mean, I got liquored up with some friends and I didn't go to jail, you know, and like the next weekend, it was more of that. And then for like all through high school, it was just amazing. I mean, my perception about everything changed and I didn't even know it was happening. I wasn't aware that I had this huge shift in my mind about the world and people. I just thought that, man, I'm pretty cool now, or I'm getting along, or just things are going well. And I just didn't have difficulty with connecting anymore. I really just was plugged in with the people around me. And it was something. And I loved it. It was just a very over-the-top experience. And I don't know if non-alcoholics get it to that level or not. I think something happens for them, but it's something in them that is not in me, where they start to feel it at a certain point and they just have this natural thing where just, I guess it just shuts down, or there's like a safety switch or something, whatever you want to call it. But I mean, I've got neighbors that are non-alcoholic and people I know that are, my bosses are non-alcoholic, and I've seen all these folks drink and they don't do things like I do when they drink. You know, there's a different experience that happens there. They get excited about doing it, and I get real excited about drinking. But their excitement is not like what it is for me. I mean, I start to feel comfort just walking to the store knowing that I have enough money to get it. You know, like that's a little odd, you know, in general. I feel comfortable if I know that I have enough. And if, you know, and if it's a bonus if I feel like I can get drunk without people interfering too. So, you know, that's sometimes it's going to happen and you have to deal with it. But I just, and so that means that, you know, drinking alone was a big thing. That turned into a big thing. I loved it. But my thought process and the way what alcohol does for me is not like the non-alcoholic. And so I didn't realize this, but man, high school was just, it was something. I mean, it was real powerful. And I mean, I wasn't doing good at all. I mean, I just was playing in bands and just getting crazy all the time. But I felt like everything was, the world was possible. I felt like I had a lot of hope. And it was a spiritual experience. I mean, it really was. So anyway, I left high school. I tried to go out into the world and took a swing at doing some stuff out in Los Angeles. I lived out there for a couple of years, and I moved back when that kind of fell apart. The one thing that began to happen in California was I would have periods of time where I was separated from alcohol because of my, probably because a number of things, because everybody around me was kind of giving me grief about it. And I was having to stop, or I was out of money, or I was, you know, all these different things. But I was getting resentful that was happening. And every time I was drinking, I was having things happen and I couldn't remember what was going on. My roommate, I woke up one morning and he stopped talking to me. And like, we're living together. And it wasn't like a big place. And he didn't talk to me for weeks. And he refused to tell me what was wrong. And he finally told me that I had, one night I had gotten drunk and hit on his girlfriend or something. She told him all about it. I denied it. I mean, I was like, oh, she's just messing with you or whatever. Like, I believe, like, in my mind, since I don't remember, it couldn't have happened. You know, I think that's probably where I was coming from. And I mean, I just was like, that's just crazy. There's no way, you know. And looking back, I'm like, oh, I'm sure that happened. You know, I mean, that's just the kind of, I just do ridiculous things when I get drunk. My behavior is very inconsiderate, inconsistent. It's, I mean, it varies on the scale of ridiculous, right? They put up the ridiculous scale. I'm all over the place. So I'm losing the ability to control it. I'm blacking out. I'm resentful at people. I feel like nobody respects me. Nobody's listening to me. You know, I can't make a living. I mean, I'm making a living. I'm working, but as it says, the pay envelopes melted like snow in June, is what it says in our book or something. And it's classic. There are Eskimos everywhere giving me scotch, you know? And I couldn't figure it out. You know, I was just so angry, and I wasn't to blame. So I left and I came back to Virginia. I started working in the restaurant business, and it was a relief. I just was like, man, this is great. I'm in an environment where everybody's drinking and doing what they're doing. And it's like what I want to do. And I just fit right into that whole scene. I'm making a lot of money. I'm living at home, you know. And I'm 20, I think maybe 20, getting ready to turn 21. And for the next 10 years or so, or the next 10 years before I, you know, my life looked just really the same. It was just running from one restaurant to the next. I moved to Richmond from Williamsburg, and I got into VCU. I went to the VCU for a couple of years, but a day at a time, over a period of time, I was failing out of classes or withdrawing, but continuing to get the financial aid, you know, and it was helping with everything, all the drinking. And I wasn't able to do any inspiration I had for anything other than was just being, I was trading it in, you know, it was just was cashing it in for drinking. It was taking an exhilarating and important part of my life, just like, you know, just like Bill talks about. It was really, it was just kind of overtaking everything. And I didn't know, not really, you know, some things were starting to happen. I was about 22 or so. I think I got my first DUI, my only DUI, thank goodness. But then I just was like, I don't really need a license. Who needs a license? I mean, this is like what I'm thinking. That's crazy. Like, how are you? But I'm living in the fan, and like in Richmond, it's just this area. It's just nothing but like apartments and bars. And so I'm in my mind, I'm like, yeah, I'm just walking around anyway. So I just started getting drunk in public. I was going to jail all the time for just falling down drunk in public, that kind of thing. And just a lot of silliness. There isn't any kind of fiery car crash story as to why I'm your speaker tonight. But over that period of time, I lost the ability to choose whether I would drink or not. It was probably had been gone for a while, but it became started to become kind of clear. Employers were starting to have conversations with me. Girlfriends were having conversations with me, short ones, like bye, that kind of thing, like in depth. But it was like I'm leaving. My brother, you know, my mom, family members were starting to have, you know, the talk. It's the worst thing ever when somebody wants to talk to you about your drinking and feel it in your chest, you know. They're like, hey, can we talk? I'm like, oh, God, do we have to? Is it going to be about the liquor? Please hope not. Oh, it's such a threat. You know, I was just viewed as such a threatening thing. And that's how I see it. I mean, I just, even though it's, everybody else has an accurate view of what's going on other than me, and they can see it. And I believe that nobody could see it. It's so funny how many people, you know, I've sponsored many people that are like I didn't think anybody knew. I'm like, yeah, I didn't either. You know, and I didn't, I was like, I just felt like I was going out at night, doing what I was doing. I was getting up the next day and I'm forgetting, probably nobody else really remembers. But I'd show up at the bar like the next day, the same people would be looking at me like, God, what are you doing here? I'm like, what do you mean? You know, I just didn't have any recollection or, you know, sometimes I would just sense that I had done some things, you know, and then you have to kind of play like, you know, drunk detective and just kind of like figure out, you know, ask lots of questions and just kind of hint at things. And it was a lot of work. So this is what's going on. And I just was living in, like, I get a place to live. I convinced the people, like whoever's, we're all getting a place together. And after about a month of living with me, you know, the tide would turn and folks would be like, oh my God, what have we done? You know, and like, that would be it. I have to move, find some other people. We're all getting another place, you know, but we're not really taking you with us. And so I just kind of apartment hopped around because nobody wanted to live with me. Nobody could. And it was bad. I was in the spree. In our book, we're first talks about the spree. And I was waking up sometime around noon or later. Most of the time I was still drunk. And then if it was a day where I felt like, man, whatever happened last night was too heavy, tonight I'm going to try to do something different, then I would make an arrangement and within my mind. And I would, the arrangement would be either drinking less, changing my brand, drinking nothing at all, or maybe just smoking some grass and just take it easy, you know. And whatever the agreement, so me and this agreement would take off. I'd go to work. I would start to detox around 7. It would kind of start setting in. I would start to shake and sweat and all this kind of thing. And I'm trying to wait tables and it was getting a little chaotic. And then at some point, maybe around 9 or 9:30 or 10, things were kind of coming to a close. I would just find myself at the bar having a beer. And somewhere the plan has changed now. I've gone from whatever the agreement was to I'm enjoying this beer. And then I find my car at the Texaco. I'm just going to get a six pack. And I'm going to go home. I'm going to watch MASH or Cheers or some dumb show. And I'm going to drink this six pack, you know. And that, most of you probably know how long a six pack lasts and the ineffectiveness of just six beers. So it just kind of gets you going. When I drink, I just get incredibly thirsty and I get very stressed out if I feel like I don't have enough. And that all kind of starts to happen after I have a one or whatever. It just sets it off. I don't know exactly which one, doesn't matter. But when I start, that's what happens. I got to make sure everything's good. And so I'd run out, I'd go down to the store, reload, come home, run out, go to the bar, drink until last call at the bar. And then I'd find myself drinking down at the ODC club until about 6 in the morning. And then I'd make first call at another bar on the way home, pass out, wake up, repeat. And I would do that every day. I did that for just years. Every once in a while, I mean, there might be some different version of that, but that's just how I am. I'm a daily blackout, bedwetting alcoholic. That's just what happens for me. And I just got comfortable with that whole way of living. And you have to. Alcohol is the commander. And I obeyed the directions of alcohol without argument all the time. I mean, it was the perfect sponsor, really. It really sponsored me quite well. It convinced me of things, you know. not most of them were never true, you know, none of them were true. And at some point, the effect that I was getting from the drinking, you know, this great perception change and my connection, right, with everybody and being able to connect with people, that was diminishing at a pretty rapid clip. You know, I stopped having relationships with a lot of people I knew because they were giving me grief about drinking, or there was a lot of remorse about my behavior with them. So I just moved on to somebody else. And then I became kind of like, they talk about fair weather friends, and that was perfect for me. Those are folks that I just go to the bar. They're only people you see at the bar. These folks are never going to come help you move, but you do see them at the bar every night. Everybody laughs, and then you stumble home, and the next time you see them is at the bar. And that was great. That's how I wanted to do it, you know. That's what I believed, at least. And so, but even that was starting to kind of not really do the trick. And I was starting to experience like a kind of a deeper loneliness with the drinking. And it was already kind of on me before I was aware of it. And I was drinking in the morning all the time, you know, as much as I could, you know, and then I was always drinking alone whenever I could. I love drinking alone. And the effect that I was getting from the alcohol was changing. And what I specifically mean by that is I would get drunk physically, like I couldn't crawl from here to the coffee pot, but my mind was still kind of like clear. I couldn't seem to drink to flick the switch off anymore. I was still filled with whatever had happened the night before, or maybe some stuff in the past. All different types of resentment were just present. I couldn't seem to, I don't know if I've ever been able to drink away resentment. I mean, geez, it's something. But the booze certainly wasn't. At least with drinking, you could just kind of pass out, you know, or whatever, drink to oblivion. And anyway, it wasn't working. The effect wasn't there. I would get excited every time to drink, but it was short-lived. And so it became kind of like it was just a predicament, you know, and I wasn't really aware of it until getting sober years later. Looking back, I'm like, that's exactly what happened, man. I was getting pushed to the jumping off place, like where you can't live with it, you can't live without it. You know, it wasn't like I was considering quitting, but I could not seem to get comfortable with it. There was no improvement. There was no, my dream was to drink as much as I want without consequence. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like I would see other people drinking. I thought they were drinking as much as I was. I thought that they were experiencing the same everything I was. And that's not what was happening for them. You know, there's plenty of people at the bar that were non-alcoholic and they weren't, you know, they weren't like me, you know, they just were doing what they're doing. So anyway, my mom came to visit me one day. I was pretty drunk one morning and she just popped into my house and I was just like, oh Lord. She brought like a lot of what's on that literature rack, I can tell you. And yeah, she's like the interview rep showed up at my house one morning. She brought a bunch of stuff that's not on that rack. She just brought everything she had, right? You know, in hopes that maybe something would happen. And she heard about my behavior at a friend of ours wedding or whatever. And it was an open bar situation, you know, and just it's kind of ridiculous to let somebody like me near an open bar. But anyway, it's too much responsibility. So a lot of the weird things probably happened there. I don't remember, but she sat down, you know, and we kind of battled it out for about an hour. I mean, she left. And I remember telling her when she left that I wasn't going to hurt her anymore because she was distraught or whatever, you know. And that was probably the first time I'd ever gotten close to telling anybody I'm going to quit. Not about you, but like I was not running around waving the white flag saying, oh, I'm an alcoholic. You know, I think maybe some folks do that to get people off their back or something, but I just was, there wasn't really, it's not to any greatness inside of me. I just didn't. Maybe I just felt like once you start saying stuff like that, people, they get some expectations, or I don't know. I just, it would seem like a big commitment to say something like that. But I did say that to her. She left for the next 6 months. You know, I just kind of changed my brand. I mean, I wasn't sober, but I changed my brand. You know, I switched to, you know, to any form of non-alcoholic beer. You know, I continued doing some other things I was doing. So it was just me and the Sharps in a can. That's what was like my savior. I was drinking like 20 of those a day. I don't think you're supposed to drink that many non-alcoholic beers a day, but anyway, I was just going at it. And I mean, I just was doing that, just smoking all the weed I get my hands on. And everybody around me was like happy with that. They're like, this is awesome. You look so much better. You're eating, you're putting some weight on. I'm like, should be, you know? And I wasn't falling down to people's houses anymore. You know, I wasn't all these different things, you know, all the outside physical things were starting to some degree change a little bit. And the inside, I was just declining, I think. And then, I don't know, I met a girl and was like, man, I haven't seen a woman in so long. It was just like, she was like, you know, let's go out or whatever. Like, this is great. You know, but she's like, I don't date anybody that smokes weed. So I'm like, no problem. I love you. I mean, this is it. And so a couple weeks later, after she's gone, it's just me and the Sharps. And then I just started to get nervous. And I just, for some reason, I decided to come to an AA meeting in December of 99. So my first AA meeting, I don't know how much of a decision it was on my part, but the idea came into my head. And I don't know how that plays out. I wasn't reading any of the vast literature that was left for me at my house. I wasn't like seeking anything. You know, I always believe that if you're going to quit drinking, you can just do it yourself. You don't need to. I don't even know why people come to AA. I mean, I grew up going to AA meetings as a kid. I just was, you know, in a sleeping bag on the floor with my brother, and we knew that's where people come to quit drinking. But I just was like, that's not what I need to do. You know, all I got to do is just stop and just, you know, that kind of thing. But the loneliness of just being in existence without booze and without anything, I think that's really what was driving me. I mean, I just, again, I'm like in a non-connecting situation. You know, I got me, ice cold Sharps in a can, and that's it. I mean, I'm working at the bar. People are going out after work. I'm trying to do that and, you know, be non-alcoholic, whatever. And it just wasn't working. I just was not connected to anybody. And I think that's probably what happened. And I just thought, man, if I go to an AA meeting, I'll probably meet a girlfriend. Maybe I'll come. Maybe that will happen. Maybe I'll, you know, maybe I just, whatever. I don't know. Whatever it was, I just came. And there weren't any girlfriends at my first AA meeting. I can tell you, it was a room full of folks that didn't look anything like me, didn't come from any similar background. None of us were like, I was not like anybody there. It seemed that way, you know? That's my perception. And I was 100% like everybody in that room. It was an unbelievable AA experience because I sat down and I raised my hand. I'm like, my name's Eric. I'm an alcoholic. And then I listened to all the folks in that room share about hopefully what we're talking about tonight, you know, drinking and what it does for us and what it may do to us or whatever. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I mean, I was connecting with people in that meeting. And I think what it was my first experience with like loneliness starting to dissipate through listening to the stories of other alcoholics. I mean, it was incredible. I keep rubbing my eye, not because I'm going to start crying. I've got this grain of sand in my eye. I've not been able to get it out all day, so bear with me. It blew my mind. I mean, I didn't know really what to do except just kind of just sitting there listening to what's going on. And it was just like what happened with Bill and Ebby, I think. I mean, for Bill, it was like he really hadn't heard what had gone on before with somebody else. I mean, he knew how Ebby drank, but I don't know, in my mind, people were talking about things that I hadn't talked to anybody about. And there were all these things in my head that they were talking about. And I just identified at depth. I mean, so much so that I just kind of kept returning to the AA meeting. I mean, everybody kept saying, keep coming back, keep coming back. I'm like, but it was something. I really identified. I really, for the first time, I felt like I'm doing the right thing. I'm in the right spot. Definitely felt some hope, but I felt connected, and it was something, man. So I kept coming to this meeting all the time, still drinking. You know, I didn't really realize that I didn't, you know, I had this allergy to alcohol or whatever. I just thought that this was probably okay to do. And after about a month of coming to AA, the drinking just stopped. And shortly after that, I got a big book. I don't even know. I may have gotten the big book before that, but I did, because I remember drinking the Sharps and reading the big book. This is fun. But I shortly after the drinking stopping, I remember getting a sponsor. And somebody had said, you know, get a sponsor, do all this stuff. I'm like, I don't need to do any of this stuff. I didn't want to come to the meeting earlier. I didn't want to do any of that stuff. But it just seemed like I was the thing I was supposed to do. And I saw this guy that was coming to the AA meetings and seemed like he knew what he was doing. I asked him, he asked me some questions about what I wanted to do and would I follow his directions and if I wanted to be sober. And, you know, I said yes to everything. I didn't know what else to do, really. But he really seemed like he had his act together. So off we went. And so for the next 3.5 years, he was my sponsor. And I mean, he saved me. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I mean, I don't know what to do in sobriety. I know an awful lot to do about drinking, but I don't know how to behave in an AA meeting. I don't know how to behave outside the meeting, you know. So I was a little feral, to say the least. I mean, I just was really kind of crazy, man. And I was having a hard time reading this book. I could only read maybe a paragraph or so at a time. I mean, I was not speaking too well. It was just a nutty time. And so he focused on making sure that I was taking a shower, I was eating, and I was shaving, and I wasn't using any profanity in the meeting. I was sitting still, showing up on time. I was calling him every day. It was just like kind of button up type of deal. And it was great. I mean, it was really good. In a short amount of time, probably the first 90 days or so of my sobriety, my bills were getting sober. Man, my car insurance got sober. I went to the dentist for the first time. I couldn't even tell you when I'd been to the dentist prior to that. And so they took an inventory. They found some things there that was going on, which was good. Started getting my teeth sorted out. Started, you know, becoming kind of like a part of how the world works. You know, I was not doing that. The last couple of years of my drinking, I was just hanging out with my buddy Willie, who lives over in the woods in Aylett. And all we were doing is just fishing day and night, getting drunk all day long. You know, I mean, that's just how we were doing it. And I'd come back into town, make some money, and then go back out and set up in my tent at Willie's for 4 days. Come back, take a shower, work at the bar, and go back out and to my tent. My buddy Omar jokes that my front door, I used to have to unzip my front door to do whatever, which is pretty accurate, you know, which would be fine. You know, I'm not, if you want to live in a tent, I mean, that'd be good living, you know, just the way I was doing it was not, you know, just a little something. So my life, the physical things in my life started to change, man. I mean, I got rid of whatever all the nasty things I was sleeping on. I got an inflatable Coleman queen size mattress, flannel sheets. Good looking. I'll tell you what, great night's sleep. I'm not sure if I have slept better than those first few nights on that thing. I got my big book. I got my inflatable mattress, dry as a bone, you know? And I'm just tearing up reading the big book, you know, one sentence at a time. That's about all my brain can handle. I'm like, man, how could it get any better than this? This is awesome, you know? Like, I just was excited because I was so terrified of sobriety. I was like, how is it possible? How are you going to be sober? How's it going to happen? What am I going to do? What am I going to do with all this time, like free time? And how are you going to, it's a long list. Half the list is things I wasn't doing anyway, you know, and the other list was just, you know, just all these fabricated things, none of which came true, you know, none of the things I was concerned about with sobriety ever materialized. None of it. And my sponsor one time, Basil, was like, 93% of the things that you worry about never happen. That's probably like 6 or 7 months when he told me this. He is correct. That's been a true statement. I was just always living in this little 7% block of fear. You know, I was always, every situation was a 7%er. You know, I'm like, oh, but this is going to happen this time. Once in a while, something would happen. I'd be like, you know. But it's like after so much self-will and some things, you just kind of, you know, sometimes I'm just going to get so driven to do the wrong thing. That's where I end up. But anyway, this first year of sobriety was just powerful. I mean, it was something else. I didn't have any stuff. I mean, I didn't have any. I remember getting some new boxer shorts, which was just unbelievable. I would go to Walmart at like 12:30. I'd get off at work at the bar and I'd go to Walmart. I like have it to myself. I was like, oh, this is so great. So I was waking up in the morning with a wallet that had money in it. It would be right there, you know, right? It was unbelievable. It wasn't lost. I didn't have to go do, you know, I didn't spend it all or whatever. It was something else. And my sponsor was just kind of corralling me in. You know, he's really good at keeping the guardrails up. He's like, don't try to be dating anybody. You just want to stay in this lane right here. This is what we're doing. We're going to AA. And so, I mean, I don't think he said it exactly like that, but that was definitely the message. And he's like, don't quit your job. We'll start chasing money. Don't do any of this stuff. Just stay put. where you are. And I did. And I stayed in that bar for my first 2.5 years of sobriety, which is working there. I don't know what happened. At some point after coming into AA, the obsession to drink just left. And however that happens, it just was, that's the way it was. He told me to start praying every morning on my knees and at night. I still do that. I do all the things that my sponsors have told me to do, you know. Some tell, some share. My sponsor shares with me today. Basil was more of a teller. It's kind of like the school that he came from. That's fine. I probably need to be told a lot, I'm sure. It was hard to get inside in my brain. He said I had Grand Central head. I'm like, what is that? I'm like, it was just this all the time, man, you know. I could be sitting here talking to Billy, and I can't hear a damn thing he's saying, you know, because I'm thinking about this, blah, 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 you know. One day we were sitting at Steve's restaurant after a noon meeting, and it's like all of a sudden I landed in the conversation. I was like, damn. I'm like, listen, looking around, I could hear what everybody's saying, and I'm like, you know, I was like, geez, they let me off the spaceship. Here we go. It was nice. And things like that began to kind of get better. You know, I started to feel more comfortable in my surroundings. I was becoming, I don't know, sobriety. Physical sobriety was a powerful thing. It was just overwhelming. I saw myself in the mirror for the first time. And I'm like, God, that's what I look like? Like, I didn't even know what I look like. I had no idea. I walked by this mirror. I was like, oh, Jesus, you know, what is this? I don't know. I mean, it was a lot of things like that were happening. You know, I was either walking out my front door to go to the meeting or work hand in hand with the Lord, or I was crying in the shower. You know, like I couldn't, every day was just kind of like up and down. It was just nuts all the time. My emotions were all over the place. It was chaos, you know, and that's as it should be for somebody like me, I think. There is no overnight thing for what goes on. I was probably eating 4 candy bars a day, you know, just front loading sugar like you wouldn't believe. And it was, I just needed to do all that, you know. And my sponsor got me through the steps. And I remember I turned a year sober. I just remember thinking, God, what could possibly happen after this? I finally have, you know, grasped the elusive blue chip. You know, here we are. And I mean, I had no idea. He would always say things like, man, it's going to take you 3 years to get your 2 years to get your brains unscrambled and 3 to get them out of hock for a total of 5 years. Wow. And I was just like, all right. And I didn't feel upset about that. I felt relieved because I was like, man, because I was always thinking, so he's always like, every time you compare yourself to somebody else, you're going to come up short. One time he's like, go back to the bar. I was like, what? Go to the bar. I was like, okay. So one night I drove over to the bar and I just walked in there and I'm looking around like, oh my God, it just seemed so different. It was a totally different, like, it wasn't what I thought it was. It was also like, I was not, whatever I was there, I was no longer that any longer. I stayed there for a little while and then I left. And I'm sure we talked about it, but it was like, he was like, you always make sure that you compare you to you. You always compare yourself to where you were, you know, you, anybody else, you're going to come up short. So I can't say that, well, I don't know. I mean, it's just a good thing to practice. That's all I can tell you. So he was giving me things like this all the time. It was just everything with this man was action all the time. He showed me how to be an AA member. I was going to meetings all the time. He's taking me to funerals, taking me to weddings. He's taking me over to the psych ward all the time. You know, it was just crazy. It was just running around. I was in his pocket, as they say. And it was great. I mean, I didn't know what else to do. And I was about, I don't know, maybe about a year and a half sober. I started getting out there, dating a little bit. That was all exciting, you know. It seemed like that, you know, but then it was just, you know, lots of train wrecks, you know, in the first couple attempts at that whole thing, as it goes. And, but I got a different job, you know, got a different job. I started going back to school for a little while and then stopped doing that. And I wasn't really practicing much in AA except for coming to meetings and not drinking. I think I was living on, I don't know, pick one side of the triangle. It doesn't matter. I was living on one. I was hanging off the cliff of one of the little things in the triangle. What that means is I didn't have the whole pie, you know, and I think that being sober for me to be peaceful, it requires like I need all things happening. I mean, I feel like the best I've ever been in sobriety is when I've been actively, you know, taking the steps, helping people, active in my group, and, you know, just being a part of all the different things we do here. Is not my entire life. There's all kinds of, my imagination is fired. It's an understatement. So there's lots of things I've been able to do. But anyway, some things started to change in my life. You know, outside things were changing. Inside things were changing. You know, I was starting to experience untreated alcoholism. And what that looks like is a lot of resentment. Me thinking that the steps don't work. You know, I'm not wrong anymore. I really hadn't done a very good first inventory. Well, I wouldn't say that. Whatever happened in the first inventory was great because I didn't drink and it kept me sober and I'm here and I've remained sober. So I'm not going to, you know, it was just fine. But the time was coming where, you know, it had come where I really needed to get down to some causes and conditions. And I just was kind of a basket case. I just was angry all the time. I just could not seem to shake it. And fortunately, I met somebody else in sobriety who kind of recognized the condition I was in. And it was Sammy. Sammy started taking me through the book and taking me through the steps. And it's like I had never had seen the big book before. And Sammy ended up being my sponsor and was my sponsor for probably 5 or 6 years, the next 5 or 6 years of my life. And everything changed. I mean, I discovered what our book really outlines for us. I mean, I discovered what my problem was. I never really thought that I don't think that I really believed or understood the first step. I didn't really think that, I mean, I'm praying for God to keep me sober and I'm coming to meetings, but I'm thinking I'm doing all this. Like what? I don't really think, it never occurred to me that there was a power keeping me sober. I mean, I'm asking, but it was more like I'm coming and doing all this stuff. I don't know. It was just kind of messed up. And when we got to the first step, I was like, oh geez, I don't have any ability to control my drinking. I'm not able to wake up this morning and make a decision to not drink. I'm not able to leave here and stop off at a store on the way home and drink either. I can't do it. I can't seem to not do it. That's kind of where I am. That's because something else is in charge of all that. But I didn't know that. I was like, man, if I can't not drink and I can't drink, we got a situation. I'm like, what's going on here? That's a little terrifying. And I felt that way. And I was so angry at whatever I thought that God was at this point that I just, nothing was working out. You know, it was the tail end of some other relationship, which is always just your perception just gets wacky. And I was just beside myself and all this. Anyway, we got through the steps. It was like I'd never taken them. And I had a whole new experience. And I was willing to believe in something, although it's, that kind of ebbs and flows. I mean, I've been kind of remained willing to say the least. So, but at that time I was, and I finally took a real inventory and I found out what had been going on. We talked about it. I found out some things about myself for the first time. I hadn't really seen who I was, but I found out what I've been doing with other people. I kind of got clear on some things I needed to clean up and did that. And I started to live life a little differently, a lot differently than what I've been doing for the first 4 years. I mean, I started to be wrong about some things from time to time, you know? Now I'm wrong a lot. I'm wrong like every day, all the time. Yesterday I barked at some poll worker when I voted. I was like, God, what is wrong with me? I mean, I just was like, I just get crazy sometimes. So anyway, I started trying to practice seeking something, you know, and I started spending time as the instructions lay out for us to do that. And I started sponsoring people by spending time with them as all my sponsors have done with me. And that's changed quite a bit. And I started to follow the directions for that. And that's, in a nutshell, what produces this kind of change in us. And it did happen. Something happened. I turned 5 years sober and I was like, just crazy. I mean, about AA, I just was, you know, all over the place. Sometimes that happens, man, on fire, I guess, as they say. But I fell into a job that I have had up until this day. I'm in my 20th year at this job, which is crazy. That happened through a friend of mine that I used to work at the bar with, and she wanted to get sober. We went to some meetings and she ended up sobering up. And then I kind of was crashing and burning, and she was like, hey, come over here. You know, we're working over here. I'm like, nah, I don't need that. You know, I'm going to go do. So, you know, did my own thing for about a month, whatever, here, and we all fell apart. And she's like, we're still over here. And so I came to a perfect fit. Great job. It's been awesome. I mean, it's afforded me just unbelievable amounts of time and just freedom. It's just a perfect thing for me. And I had nothing to do with that. Just literally one of the things that have fallen out of the sky hit me. And that's been great. And then, you know, my brother came in and got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he came in a couple months after I did. He tells everybody he saw me wearing a new shirt one day and was like, oh, he got a new shirt. How did he do that? Because, like, you know, where would he have gotten the money for that? You know, like, it was clearly a sign that there had been some kind of psychic change if I was donning a new article of clothing, you know? And, like, he couldn't believe it. And so he was like, all right, you know. And one day I picked him up and took him to a meeting one morning, and, you know, he came in and got sober. And my mom is sober. My cousin is sober. We got a whole bunch of us. The family afterward chapter is difficult. I mean, we've got, like, it's crazy. All three of us are just, you know, Hulk is just a big mess. And it's been messy. It's gotten better. It's been messy. The whole family dynamic is certainly off right now. We got a lot of different things going on. We got an elderly mother with dementia who's alcoholic, who's not drinking. And, you know, my brother no longer comes to AA, still sober. You know, we got just different things that are just kind of causing, you know, it's just stay in your lane time. You know, that's what I do. I stay in my hula hoop, as my sponsor says. Works out quite well. It's difficult to practice, but it's a great thing. I can do that all over the place. You know, I cause less difficulty for those around me. So things like that happen. All these different things will happen in life. And I mean, there's just all kinds of things along the way. I've started to travel and go places, you know, and I went out to Alaska when I was, like, I don't know, 4 years sober, when I just started gotten through the steps or whatever, because I wanted to run a marathon and catch big fish. And so that's where you go to catch big fish, for sure. I mean, you run, and it's a big marathon too, but damn, I mean, it was awesome. I got all weird out there. So I went to an AA meeting and I met a whole bunch of people. And I went out to Alaska every year, sometimes a couple times a year, for like the next 12 years or something. And then really on and off since. I mean, it's just like, it was just crazy. And all those friends go other places, and we started going here and there together and whatever. And I found a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous out there that I hadn't really seen before. You know, people were just having a good time and doing whatever. And so when I got back from my first couple of trips, some guys I was sponsoring, I started the home group we're all in today, you know, and that's been a great time. It's been challenging. It's been a great time as well. And so I just started participating in AA differently from that point on. And I got to see other things in Alcoholics Anonymous from moving around and, you know, doing things. And I don't know. I don't know how all that really cumulatively, all of that stuff is a power that's bigger than me. You know, I find it right now more with being with you, you know, and I find it more when I'm calling somebody. I called my sponsor yesterday morning. Let's see, Sunday, Saturday. Yeah, because Friday, geez, I so goofed up at a meeting, and, you know, I've been having confrontations with people all week long. Today's goal was to, like, get through the day without going off on somebody. So far, so good. All I got to do is make it home and get in bed. We're going to be all right. But I goofed up on Friday. I called my sponsor yesterday, and it was just, I knew after talking to him, it was setting me on the right track, you know. And the whole time, I even told him, like, I don't know why I don't want to call you. I'm like, I just guess I don't believe this is going to work. But I got to tell you what happened last night. You know, it's just more of the same. He's just laughing, you know, laughing with me, not at me. But I cannot solve whatever's going on inside of me with my brain alone. I just can't. I don't know. It just doesn't work that way. But it seems to be the great plight of the alcoholic is to continue to try to do that, I guess. I mean, I know people ahead of me that still talk about that and whatever. So I just try to talk with others as much as I can. And I find solutions with that. And I pray all the time. I don't know. It's important for me to be connected with other people. But I started taking the 11th step seriously. I spend time in the morning, you know, with that. And I try to get quiet and follow the directions. And I'm doing the best I can with that. And I'm hoping I can start getting better at the nighttime stuff. I don't know. I'm always, like, good at one and not sick of the other. But I'm just more likely to believe. I mean, there's the fact that I just cannot deny is my physical sobriety. I mean, that's proof that there's some kind of power. I just have not wanted to drink. I haven't thought about it. I haven't had it, the obsession return. And I have zero explanation for that kind of thing. I just, how does that even happen to somebody like me? It was the only thing that I wanted to do ever, you know? And it surrendered all other ambition for it. Many folks go on that way. I don't have an explanation for it other than there's something is intervened. And so I kind of keep that in my back pocket whenever I get agnostic or whatever about things. And usually just it's okay. I'm not upset with it. I'm going to keep seeking. My sponsor says to keep on seeking. He's a good man. Victor was always pushing me back to a spiritual solution. He's always pushing me to seek, even though I reject sometimes the things he says or whatever. And I just, I got a lot to say about it, or I'm just in a bad mood, whatever. He's convinced his life makes sense. He's got a life that makes sense, man. He has a successful relationship. He's a sober man, an Alcoholics Anonymous, great group. All these different things I admire. He's peaceful, a peaceful person. And that is like my goal. I just really want to be peaceful. I've always wanted to be peaceful. Always want to feel free and peaceful, not with, just other than that. And I've had buckets of time in sobriety that have been like that, And I hope to have more. And I know that it's going to be able to happen provided I stay here. So I thank you for having me talk tonight.
Thank you.